T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hour number two, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. So Linda Cohn of ESPN tweeted out earlier, and Andy Hart, not only retweeted her, but agreed with her wholeheartedly, basically suggested that maybe Tuca needs a seat on the bench tomorrow. Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, tweeted out 17 minutes ago, quote, Tuca Rask calls Toronto bubble games dull and compares them to exhibition games without crowds. He says he's, quote, not expecting too much when it comes to results, unquote. Coming after a loss when you have an .899 save percentage and at times aren't fighting hard to see the puck. Start Halak, unquote. Did you see him not fighting too hard to see the puck?
No, I did not see that. In fact, no. You know what I liked? You know the little teeny thing? I liked the little swipe on the goalie interference. I thought he was feisty. I don't want to replace Tuca the player. I'd like to replace Tuca the post-game interview and comments. Do I think he's the better Bruins goalie? Yes. Now, is there a little bit of an emotion to me that would say, get him out of there? Okay, you don't care about the results, and I don't care about you. Get him out of there. I still think he's their best goalie.
Yeah, I think there's two ways.
And isn't that what matters?
I think there's two ways. Yeah, absolutely, that's what matters. There's two ways to look at his comments. Again, you can look at it, and again, I'm not defending what he had to say, but you can look at it the way Andy's looking at it, which is, well, I don't care about winning. I couldn't care less about this thing that we call hockey and all of that, right? You can look at it that way. I tend not to look at what he said last night in that way. What I think he was trying to say was, hey, listen, you know, what just happened, happened. And I can't go back and change what just happened. I can only change what's going to happen moving forward. And, you know, I have to affect what is in front of me rather than what's behind me. Now, if he said it that way, it'd be great. And people are saying, well, Nick, you're defending him. You're putting words in his mouth. Well, listen, professional athletes are not always the greatest orators, right? They're not politicians. They don't have a script they're going off of. They just got off the ice. And this goes to Dale's point in the first hour. We want athletes to be honest, but yet when they're refreshingly honest or say what's on their mind, we sit there and we look at every single solitary word that he says, and then we try to mold it and say, well, this is what he was trying to comment on. This is what he was saying. You can read what you want to read off of what he said last night. I take it the way I do. Andy, you take it the way you do. But again, I do think sometimes we expect way too much from athletes to say exactly what we want them to say.
I think that's fair, but my point would be more, we like to praise what we interpret, and this is fans, media alike, as, you know, you said, I think it was Maria earlier, like she had a whole script of what she wanted to hear. Well, that's because we've been beaten down over the years, I guess, with what they are supposed to say, and we praise them. So that doesn't matter either, right? Like when you get, you know, some camp body who's saying the right thing, Gunnar Olszewski, oh, just listen to this guy. He loves football. No one works. Okay, well, we'll ignore that, too. We'll just go back to the end result. Because there is an end result. I agree with you on that, Nick. I don't want Halak in. If Halak went to a microphone today and said, I could not possibly care more about the end results, and, you know, I'm so fixated on winning that it's driven me since birth and all that, that doesn't mean I want him to play, right? If a guy talks a better game than Tom Brady, if Tom Brady's the better quarterback, I want Tom Brady in the game. This is a results-driven business, correct? But
correct.
In what we do, we take everything that comes around those results. Because otherwise, you know what we'd sit here and do? Bruins lost last night.
Yeah, I guess my issue is that, you know, again, I'm not defending what he said. We're just taking different things out from what he said. We're looking at it differently.
Sure.
I think you can look at what he says. That's totally fair. He said it in a public forum. I just don't take out of what he said that he goes out there tomorrow and says, I don't care about this silly game. And, like, you know, bangs his goalie stick around and goes, I don't even want to be here in Toronto. Like, I don't take that from what he said. People will. I don't.
617-779-7937. Ted's in Scituate. Hey, Ted.
Hey, Dale. I know that you're old enough to remember this. I don't know about your partner, but do you remember a guy called Grant Fuhr?
Sure.
Pretty good
great
goalie,
goaltender,
right?
For the Edmonton. Great goaltender, right, for the Edmonton Oilers. Right. Now he had the benefit of playing for the greatest
Edmonton
team ever. But...
Right. The only reason that Edmonton didn't win five in a row, right? They won 84-85. They lost 187-88. Didn't win 86 because the defenseman knocked the puck in the semis off
Steve
of Grant
Fuhr's
pad and went into the net.
Yeah, it was Steve Smith from behind the net.
Steve Smith. After the game, they were talking to Grant Fuhr, and you had to read in the papers in those days. We didn't have, you know, all the instant analysis that we do now on cable and Instagram. And they asked Grant Fuhr, and they said, well, how do you feel about this? He goes, well, you know, I let a soft one in early, and, you know, that's the way it tumbles. And the reporters followed up and said, I can't believe you're saying that not winning the third Stanley Cup, you're not more upset. And Fuhr said, what do you want me to do, cry? He said, that's not who I am. I'll be back. I'll be ready. But I'm going to go out and have a good time now. I mean, I can't beat myself up. You can't expect everybody, somebody used the word optics, you can't expect everybody to have to put on the face that the public expects. This guy's a great goalie, as you said, the numbers speak it, and guess what? You know, maybe that's his way of getting ready, that he puts his stuff in the rearview mirror, and hey, by the way, it wasn't a great playoff atmosphere, but I'll take that guy every day of the week and twice on Sunday over 95% of the goalies, right?
Well, and I think going to Joe Haggerty's point, you know, he says, oh, .899 save percentage. Again, we've talked about this among the three of us. He gave up three goals last night. Two of the three, it's really hard for me to blame him for.
Sure.
And yet, oh, .899 save percentage. Like, your implication is he sucked.
Right,
and none of us think he sucked last night.
But that's where we get into the weird area of the goalie being the goalie and the end result,
yeah,
and connecting the two dots and the quarterback and the stats. And I mean, there's a lot that goes into that. I think I will go back to my main point here with Nick and sort of this battle we have been in.
It's been fun.
I enjoy it. I'm in a side battle on Twitter, which can be distracting during breaks.
We're going to be talking about that in a little while.
A lot of fighting going on today. I don't think you're supposed to fight this much, but Nick, you are saying there's no correlation necessarily between his, or negative correlation, between Rask's attitude and comments and the results. He's a good goalie. He's proven that over a long period of time, right? Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm saying we are getting these insights into his motivations, and he's articulating his philosophies on life and hockey and everything else. I don't know that he wouldn't be better if he took a different approach. And I want to compare these to the people who we do know,
right,
like Kobe, who be all, end all, win all. You know, winning's not winning's not everything, it's the only thing kind of mentality of the football world, of the Lombardis, of the Belichicks.
Right. Well,
right?
That's why I bring up Manny, though. Here's what you're doing, Andy, and I'm doing the same exact thing. You're taking examples of people that were, you know, you can categorize them as hardos, and then they go out and they perform and they win, et cetera, et cetera. You're going to use those examples. That's why I bring up Manny, to highlight the fact that not everybody is like that, and it doesn't necessarily mean if they're not like that, they're not going to be really good at what they do. I'd also say that just based off of what Tuukka said last night, you used the word motivation. I don't think he's motivated by anything he says at that podium, at the dais, at the microphone. I think we are overthinking way too much. I think Tuukka said what he said last night. He woke up this morning. He doesn't even care. Like, he doesn't care.
Oh,
what
I
he
agree.
Said last
he doesn't
night.
Care.
Yeah, but he doesn't care about what he
doesn't
said
care
last
about
night.
What, yeah, exactly.
I also would like to add into the discussion, because we've sort of gone down the one road for a while now, the shape comment, right? Where did he say it?
Well, and I'll give you the context from Andrew Raycroft, who's, you know, former NHL goaltender. When we talked about this, he hasn't played, you know, real hockey since March 10th.
Okay.
And now all of a sudden, You know, he's played, what, four hockey games? I mean, you're probably not. You're in physical shape. He's a professional athlete. It's not like he got fat and sassy during the COVID break. What he's talking about is goaltender shape, seeing shots, being prepared. You know, he talked about his hip flexors. Well, you can work out all you want. Until you get on the ice, that doesn't matter.
And we have the comments from Tuukka, so if we're going to discuss them, let's hear them.
Considering I had 4 months off, not in prime shape.
Not in prime shape.
He's talking about goaltending.
Right, hockey shape, football shape, that type of, not that he did nothing and just ate bonbons on the couch and changed diapers. I don't want to insinuate that.
Bonbons?
Yes.
They're still around?
I think you can find them. I think they might have a new name.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, Dale.
I got to Google
trust
that.
Trust me, I don't know anymore.
Is that not on the Awaken 180 approved?
No, we're not doing bonbons.
Breaks, snack. So I don't want to insinuate he did nothing and like he's so out of shape, but he brought it up like he's not ready to go. And that's another thing you don't want to hear.
You can't get ready until you play, until you get out there and take shots. And even practice is not the same as games because, in practice, you fire one by Tuukka Rask's ear, you're going to get yelled at.
Right.
You know,
but he has to be ready. You know why? Because the race has begun. The series has begun. Right. This like they're competing that whatever you thought those other games were that were left up to interpretation, I guess, for different teams, coaches, players. This is real. Right. So it doesn't matter whether you think you should be in, quote unquote, hockey shape or August shape or June shape or whatever shape you want to be in. You're in a Stanley Cup series. You're now in a dogfight to some degree. Right. It's a 1-1 series.
Yeah.
Who knows where this goes?
I was just thinking, you know, I'm going to try to make this as simple as possible in my own brain. When you look at, you know, what Tuukka said and how people handle certain things, I kind of split it into two camps almost where what would you rather have? Would you rather have a guy like Baker Mayfield last year who's talking the greatest talk in the world? I mean, you give that dude a microphone, he can cut as good of a promo as Ric Flair or Dusty Rhodes, right? He's going to tell you exactly what you want to hear. He's fired up. He's full of P and V. Man, that's my quarterback. And then he goes out there, and the results don't really echo what he says. Or would you rather have somebody who is honest with himself and with the situation, evaluating certain things, might not say everything that you want him to say, but when he plays, he's one of the best at his position? I would much rather have the latter than the former.
Let's go to Steve and Billerica. Steve, you're next on Sports Radio.
Good morning.
Hi.
What's up, Steve?
Hi.
I got a question. How much do you guys pay for season tickets?
I don't.
Nothing.
I work.
Right. The other two, do they pay
nothing
for season
no
tickets?
What's your point? No. So, yeah, nothing. Zero. Point? What's your
My
point?
My point is, if I'm not a season ticket holder either, but
so you don't pay anything either.
I was. I'm older now and I've retired.
No,
but
you're older?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Is it a problem?
No, finish
your thought,
ahead.
Please.
All right, okay. All right, my thought is, if I was a season ticket holder and I paid all that money for my tickets and all the money for the paraphernalia and there's no bigger diehard fans in the world than Bruins fans, you don't think they were watching last night with their Bruins shirts on? He says that and you say to yourself, so I care more about losing than he does? It's not how he's going to play on Saturday. He'll probably be great on. I'm a big Rask fan, but that was not something he shouldn't have said.
So
if this was 2 years ago when Kyrie Irving said it, you'd all be flipping out.
No, listen, we agree that it's something that he shouldn't have said. I don't think any of us have sat here and said, "Great job, Tuukka. You said exactly what you should have said. We're all on the same page, buddy." None of us are saying that.
And yet we hate it when what we get from athletes is cliche speak. Oh, I got to work harder. Got to bear down. Yeah, just show up and work hard. I mean, we hate cliche answers.
Yes.
And then when an athlete says what he thinks, we want to kill him for it.
Right. I blame Bill Belichick in part in this city for that because he has made us believe that there's a direct correlation between the player says something in the locker room and the performance on the field on Sunday or that night. But that is how we've become. By the way, I did not see a Kyrie comparison coming. I'm still trying to formulate that in my head with Tuukka Rask and Kyrie.
I don't understand either. Like, you know, you're still buying season tickets, right? Like, you didn't like what he said last night, and I know he doesn't have season tickets anymore because he retired and all that good stuff. I'm trying, good luck and wish you well in your retirement. But when you look at, you know, are we still going to watch tomorrow? Like,
yes.
If, you know, because of what Tuukka said last night, if you're telling me if this team goes on a run, people are going to be affected by what Tuukka said last night. Can we just stop with the hyperbole for the love of God?
Wait, if they don't go on a run, though, will they be affected?
If they don't go on a run and Tuukka doesn't play well, then Tuukka should be criticized. I mean, I have no problem with that.
Do you think all other players, like, is this, let's boil it down to some other aspect of this that I think is the Bill Belichick thing, the distraction idea, that comments can lead to distraction.
Right.
Bulletin board material or distraction, I think this would fall under distraction. Are other players going, you know, they were already asked about it a little bit, but will this be a story? Will other players in Zooms, I don't know what their, Dale, do they have media availability today?
I believe so, yes.
So
Bruce Cassidy and selected players, not everybody, because I think this is an off day for them.
Right. So it's fair to think they will be asked about these comments again based on it's a talking point with fans. I'm reading columns.
Bruce probably will. I doubt that, and I'm just throwing names out here for the sake of discussion. If Charlie McAvoy is one of the guys on the Zoom session, I doubt he's going to be asked about whether Tuukka cares or not. And if he's asked about, you know, what do you think about Tuukka Rask as your goaltender, he's going to go back to cliche speak. Nobody I'd rather have back there, great competitor, and all that stuff.
Right, but is that a distraction? Is that a distraction if these guys get asked if there's a coach and three players and they're all asked, maybe a follow-up? Is that a distraction? Does it matter?
I think it's a distraction if it lingers. I don't think it's going to linger. You know, listen, we have to do a talk show today, right? So
yes,
we're talking a lot about this. We get paid to do this, so we're talking about what Tuukka said. And fans, you know, that listen to what he said, they're going to think about what he said all day today up until the game tomorrow because that's what they're thinking about. Athletes, I don't think the guys in the dressing room are thinking about what Tuukka said last night. And I think if people ask them about what Tuukka said, they've already moved on. They've got way too much to be concerned with about tomorrow's game than what was said after a tough loss. Like, they're more focused on, hey, guys, can we manage the puck? You know, can we stop turning the puck over in our defensive zone and giving Carolina, like, it seemed 10 minutes straight of zone time?
Which, by the way, he doesn't say. He could. That's where he does edit himself. He doesn't rip his teammates. He doesn't say, well, geez, I mean, you let Dougie Hamilton walk into a slap shot from 25 feet. What do you expect? He doesn't do that stuff.
Dale, right. I don't pretend to know Tuukka personally. Do you think he regrets what he said?
I doubt it. I also think, and I'm just guessing here because I haven't spoken to him today at all. My guess is he didn't see any big deal about what he said last night. And frankly, almost everything he said was all the truth. It's not the same. They're doing everything they can do from a league level. I give them all the credit in the world. But it's not the same in an empty arena as it is in a full arena. It's not. It doesn't feel the same. And all of that stuff is true. I don't have any issues. The one thing that everybody's talking about here is the whole, basically, I can't control the outcome. I can only control what I do. I think he feels that's the truth.
And he's just trying to have fun.
Well, I understand that word sticks in your craw. But
it did a little bit, Dale. How can you tell?
I don't think what he said was great, but for us too, it's all about expectations, and I think a lot of people get wrapped up into what they expect somebody to say, and when that person doesn't hit the right notes, so to speak, it's hellfire and brimstone. And I think at times we just have to realize that not every single athlete is going to say what we want them to say. Now, you can disagree with what they said, and I do disagree with how Tuukka handled it. But my ultimate point is what matters is winning. And what matters is going on a deep run here and winning that friggin' cup.
And I'll give you another example. Can you think of two players, more diametrically opposed from a personality point of view than Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron? I mean, they are as different as you can possibly be.
Right.
They are best friends. They're line mates. They are incredible players. But they just are totally different human beings. Now, they both find a way to be great players at their positions, despite the fact that they approach it differently. Tukarask just has a different personality than many Bruins fans want him to convey.
Right, and that's the unknown in all of this that we've been talking about, is we don't know, you know, Nick keeps referring to the results. The results have been good. But we don't know the results with a different mentality. We don't know the results, and we're also, sometimes what people say and what they think are different things, too. We haven't even sort of delved into that. Now, Dale, based on your history with Tuca and the changes he's made, I think he probably has gone down this Zen sports psychologist road.
Oh, he specifically, and I'm not telling tales out of school here. I'm working on my second book.
Yep.
And I talked to Tuca rather extensively as part of that book, and he said to me specifically, I couldn't succeed playing like that. I wasn't going to be able to. He has doubts whether he even would have kept an NHL career. He realized, if I'm like that, I got no chance.
Right. And we see that in sports all the time. You know, there's brash guys, then there's quiet assassins or whatever you want to call them. I mean, we go down the road of the Deion Sanders, Darrell Revis, Stephon Gilmore. All great corners, right? Defensive player, Hall of Famers. They certainly didn't share the same styles, personalities, the way they speak with the meat. There's nobody more quiet than Stephon Gilmore, right? But he also has a little quiet, competitive assassination side to him that if you really pay attention. So everybody's different. There's, you know, different ways to skin a cat, right? Different ways to get the job done. But I also would argue we can't just tie in. If the Bruins go out and win 5-1 on Saturday, I can't say that no player in the locker room cared about these comments. If they go out and get their doors blown off, I am
you
not
also,
going
you
to
also
say,
can't say.
No, I won't say it. I won't say they got their doors blown off because Tuca said something dumb in, or what I believe to be dumb in his post-game comments. I'm
so
not making that.
Ultimately, what you're saying is it has no effect.
No, what I'm saying is we don't know the effect. And that's where you went off on a whole different tangent and long-winded road about Tom Brady comparison. My comparison was only we could not directly tie winning and losing to him showing up in March, April, and May, right? Because one year he won, and then the next year he didn't. We can't make, you know, all his QB percentage, you know, completion percentage went down 4%. I can't tell you that's because he didn't show up. I also can't tell you that it wouldn't have been better if he had shown up. That's
but
my point.
My point is that he's been one of the best goalies in the NHL, the way he's handled himself. Like, so maybe Andy, we can say, and I don't think I was too long-winded. I mean, there was one rant. I think you get
there was one that went a little long there.
Hey, I enjoyed myself. That's who I am, man. You take it or you leave it. When you look at this though, like reasonably speaking, Dale, I'll ask you. You've been around the game for a long time. You obviously do pre-post for the Bees. You know, reasonably speaking, how much better could Tuca actually be than he's been?
I will tell you, he thinks he would be worse. He thinks he'd be a lot worse. He has doubts whether he'd even still be in the league if he didn't change.
Right, but the theory that I think Andy's going with is we don't know, right? He could arguably be even better than he's been. I don't know if it's even possible for him to be better than he's been. If he was better than what he's been, we're not talking about him being in the conversation for the Vezina. We're talking about him being the greatest goalie of all time. Like, never letting a puck go by, never having a bad game. Like, and I just think that's way too high water of a mark for anybody.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. My buddy Andy Hart has pissed a lot of people off today, and I'm not even talking about Nick and me.
Listen to that laugh.
And I'll tell you that Andy couldn't be more wrong than what he wrote today on WEEI.com.
Ooh.
We'll get into it in just a couple of minutes, but first we trend.
Back to Dale and Keith on WEEI.
Feistiness and F-bombs.
Heartburn.
Mr. Hart.
You, my friend, are a boob.
Heartburn.
Cry for me.
Let me start by saying this. The job of a columnist, a newspaper columnist, an internet columnist, the job of a columnist is to have an opinion, write something, get people talking. You, Andy Hart, are very good at what you do.
Appreciate you, Dale.
I'll put you in the same category as Dan Shaughnessy, although you might not like
that.
Wow.
I would take that as a compliment. One of the great columnists.
You wrote on WEEI.com, Tom Brady was right about coronavirus fear. And before I give you my opinion of your column, let's just say you're getting a lot of response. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I'm struggling to keep up on Twitter. It's
a little bit of likes and clicks.
Appreciate the clicks, though, everyone. Rob Bradford will be happy. It's Dale. Apparently, you're not allowed to have opinions in this world. That's what I took. It was a bleep take, according to your buddy, actually, Dale. Doug Kide over at Nessun.com.
Yep.
He thinks it's a bleep take and questioned the editor. Can't believe that it actually got published. And I think that's symbolic of the world we live in. Counterthought, not okay at all.
I do not agree that you should not be allowed to voice your opinion and write what you wrote. I do think it's a bleep take. I think you're dead wrong. And okay. I think you've let the emotions get the best of you here because schools are closed and sports may be closing down, high school sports, school sports, that sort of thing. Yep. You are deeply involved in all of those things. You've got kids at home who you're concerned about. I say that with admiration, not as a criticism. And I think the idea that you think college conferences or schools or superintendents don't care about myocarditis, you know, don't care about things like long-term lung issues, they're just falling victim to fear. No, I think you're dead flat wrong.
Yeah, I think they care too much. I think they are
I don't think you can
fearful.
Care too much about whether people get sick and have long-term health issues. How can you care too much about that?
Because if you're making decisions based on thousands and thousands of student athletes and coaches and administrators and everything that goes into this, these are big decisions. This is not like a family of four making a decision in a small vacuum. You tailoring it towards small percentages, and oh, by the way, small percentages that no one's really sure about. You know, there are conflicting opinions throughout the medical field. You know, the Duke doctor thinks one thing and he doesn't understand why they're canceling because I'm telling him we can do this. And then, you know, the Pac-12 commissioner says, yeah, we do look at it differently. We don't understand how you're doing this. You know, the back and forth nature of this. And I will tell you what I was very, very much on. You talk about the local level. What I was very, very much affected by was the last week of school decisions in the state of Massachusetts, because those coincided with these decisions from the MAC and the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and the football decisions. So you had my town. I sat in 2 hours, Dale. I feel like I invested in this. 2 hours. I watched a Zoom school committee meeting. Never thought I would do that. Be honest with you. Never thought I would do that.
2 hours?
2 hours I invested in watching this. I was reading every slide of the PowerPoint presentation. I then listened to all the school committee members, a number of whom actually cried while discussing their vote. And they all said very similar things. I know it's probably never going to be safer in terms of our numbers until we actually eradicate this virus. The numbers are so low in our town and in the state and the all that data. But I just can't vote for my kids to go back to school, even on a hybrid basis. Excuse me? You just said it can't possibly be safer. We've done a good job. We've kept things sort of squashed down. Praise the governor. Praise whoever you want to praise for that. Praise us as a group of human beings living within this state. And then you voted to not do it, to stay home, to say the sky is falling and I couldn't possibly leave my living room. And what I think people
that's where you've taken this too far. And it's okay. Where I have a disagreement. By the way, I wholeheartedly endorse your right to your opinion, your right to express it. I think you did a great job for .com and for WEEI in writing this thing, even though I think you're dead wrong. You want to just say, well, screw it. We got to get back to normal. Just get out there. Just go.
Absolutely not. What I want to do, like the governor, who said he doesn't see any reason why students shouldn't return to schools, is do it responsibly. Do it within a hybrid model. I fully agree. We cannot return completely.
Let me just quote you, okay?
Uh-oh, that's not good.
The worst and most far-reaching symptoms of the coronavirus, one that's not listed as such when you do a simple Google search, is fear. Fear to live our lives. Fear to return to some form of normalcy. Fear to advance back into the world, even as the experts, testing and data, push us in that direction. I'm sorry. Testing and data are not pushing you in the direction of going back to normal.
Well, then why is the governor, who was as cautious as anybody on the planet, Dale, putting out these town-by-town maps of green and yellows and whites and all, and 90% he is advising there's no reason why you shouldn't be returning to some form of normalcy. I never advocated for 23 kids in a small room with the teacher and this and that. No, no, no. We can be smart. We could, what did I used the term the other day, reasonable accommodations. Make reasonable accommodations for safety. Make reasonable accommodations on the athletic field. Wherever you are choosing to try to get back to normalcy, because what people miss out on is there is an adverse effect to not returning to normalcy.
No, I think everybody does understand that. And
no, because I had one of the critics, Evan Lazar, who works for CLNS,
yeah,
came after me. You don't think there's deaths? There's a hundred this, and these people were hospitalized. The economy's in the crapper. We got more unemployment. Yeah, I know the economy's in the crapper. I know we have unemployment, and that's why I'm advocating for some people to pull back a little bit on the reins of fear and return to the real world. Take a little bit of a chance moving forward, knowing that where are a lot of those deaths? They were in nursing homes. Where are a lot of those deaths? They're in the elderly. Have to be. Dale, I do not think it's unreasonable for you to be cautious given your age and your life situation, correct? Just like Julian Edelman very well said, I don't hold it against the players that opted out, but my life situation right now, I'm going to play. It made sense for me to play.
I want to jump in here if I can. I know you guys are going back and forth, and it's good stuff. I enjoy listening to it. I've just got a couple of points here. You know, I tend to look at this, and I try to reasonably look at everything, right? And I understand what Andy's saying, and I don't think what Andy is saying is necessarily wrong when you talk about classrooms and trying to responsibly return to school. The problem is that responsibility in this case depends on universal adherence. What have we seen in this country right now that tells us that we are universally ready to adhere to guidelines and protocols? Nothing. Zero. Zilch. And in a school atmosphere, you can set it up any way you want to, but it only takes 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 people to not follow along with the program, and that can screw everything up.
Then they're out. Isn't that the way schools work in general?
No, but
here's the part, Andy, that I think you and I part company on. When the Pac-12 pulled the plug on the season, and I've read several articles about it, they said there was a 90-minute Zoom conference call the night before the vote, and it changed everything. And it was medical experts talking about myocarditis and specific athletes who have already shown the development of heart issues and the long-term health effects that they're concerned about. Unfortunately, for much of America, what we hear is, oh, come on, they'll get a couple of sniffles, they'll be fine. What the medical experts are now saying is, we're not sure that's true.
They are not sure. But
they'd rather err on the side of caution. Let's not put, I'm saying kids, college young men, in jeopardy of developing long-term heart issues because, damn it, we need a Pac-12 football game on Saturday.
I want to answer Andy's question because he asked me a question. You know, here's the problem, Andy. Number one, do these people that get infected know that they've been infected at the time? What's the incubation period? How often are they being tested? What's the efficacy of those tests? Because you can say, oh, the kids that don't pay attention, they're not responsible, kick them out, get rid of them. Well, how long does that take to happen? How many people have they already infected? Do the people above them actually believe in the guidelines, or are they just doing it to cover their own ass because they're the principal or they're the professor or they're the teacher and they might let some things slip by? With what we're dealing with here, letting some things slip by is not going to work. Again, this has to be universal adherence. When you see what happened in Georgia, not every kid in Georgia was acting a fool, but what happened, Andy? What happened was they said, let's return, let's do this, let's try to follow protocols, etc. Well, within a week, there was, you know, a couple of fires inside those schools. They had to shut those schools down.
But did they follow protocols? Because the plans I've heard locally because schools came up with plans for returning to the building. The plans I've heard.
And almost universally, they also decided, and again, I've got a daughter who's in one of those systems. They said, we can't do this.
No, but at least they had plans.
It's not physically possible.
In Georgia, I didn't see a plan.
Well,
I saw a hallway that was overcrowded and looked like it could have been 5 years ago as easily as it could have been last summer.
I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with the picture, but how do you handle hallways? You know, I mean.
Well, first of all, there's half as many students in the school, and I've heard one-way hallways. I've heard students stay in the same class, and the teachers rotate.
The
teachers go from room to room, so your science guy shows up, then your, you know, history teacher. So I didn't see any attempt in that Georgia photo that people point to of reasonable accommodations. Be smart.
Fellas,
protocols.
Hold the thought. We'll get right back.
Damn it.
Let me just explain the business to you. 617-779-7937. Dale and Keefe with Hart and Cattle. Sports Radio WEEI.
Dale and Keefe.
Middays 10 to 2.
On WEEI.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Let me quote again from my friend Andy Hart's column on WEEI.com. Quote, "We've learned this week that the worst symptom of COVID-19 isn't troubled breathing, fever, or fatigue. It's not the possibility of long-term lung issues. It's not even myocarditis, a newfound complication that came to the forefront when Red Sox would-be ace Eduardo Rodriguez was lost for the shortened MLB season." Here's the part where I have an issue, okay? Nope, the worst and most far-reaching symptom of the coronavirus, one that's not listed as such, is fear.
Fear
to live our lives.
That's good.
I'm sorry, but what I think the college conferences and high school superintendents and state education commissioners, it is fear. It's fear of long-term lung issues and myocarditis and putting people's lives in jeopardy when they cannot come up with a system to mitigate against that yet.
Dale, do you believe there are negative ramifications to not playing, to shutting down schools, to home learning,
absolutely.
You know, unemployment? Yeah,
massive. I don't think that they are as long-term as long-term lung issues or myocarditis. They are not as life-threatening as those things.
Well, first of all, we know nothing about myocarditis, right? It's a very, even the diagnosis of it, if you read a lot of these stories and how they're not, like, they go through a process and it ends, I think the last step is like an MRI, a heart MRI, where they're trying to figure out, do we need, and I've likened it a little bit to the concussion CTE outbreak where, oh, concussions are up. Well, you're diagnosing more concussions because there's this different view of it. It's no longer, you got your bell rung, get back out there, kid. Oh, you hit your head? Why don't you sit and we're going to deem this a head injury and we'll figure it out. Not all that will be blah, blah, blah. So there's also a question of, this is a result of viruses. This isn't necessarily just from coronavirus myocarditis. It's a bigger issue. And we may have seen this in the past and no one knew about it, correct? Guys may have even died from it and no one knew about it because it hadn't sort of caught on. So I think these are, niche is probably not the right word, but they're still figuring out how big a deal and how widespread these are. Whereas if you could put a nice little neat package number on, we got the death total, 167,000 we're up to, right? If you could put that on
167,298.
Okay. If you could put a nice little number on teenagers across the U.S., there are 117 million of them. I know there's not, because there's not that many teenagers.
Right, right.
But if you could put a nice number on it, who are experiencing, in the opinion of doctors, irreparable sociological damage or developmental damage or whatever, would that put a different spin on this?
Sure.
Because it's a vagary now?
If they could, they would.
But they can't. But we know it's happening, correct?
But they know the medical issues are happening.
Well, not to those kids, first of all. How many deaths in Massachusetts from young people?
See, again, what you're ignoring is we don't know all of the death numbers. What we know is that there are concerns, and as this thing has gone on, we've learned more and more. There are concerns for even college athletes, physically fit, young, vital college athletes, that this is causing long-term health issues that could affect their lives forever.
What percentage?
I don't know the answer.
Okay, I also don't know the answer that, you know, Wiggy was very strong about. Wiggy wouldn't exist today. He would not be sitting in this chair with Greg Hill if he did not have a senior year of high school sports. He firmly believes that, right? That he would have gone down a whole different road. Not going to school. Who knows where I am? I'm never Tom Brady's guy in the snow. I'm never a Super Bowl. Like, how many of those kids are there, and how does that counterbalance or relate to the numbers everybody wants to promote?
All right,
positive test rates, hospitalizations, and those things.
Again, I've appreciated and enjoyed this conversation between you two guys. Let me bump in here for a minute, please. When you look at it, we can't just get lost on the kids and the children and the effect on the young adults. We have to realize that this disease can contract to older people that are much more susceptible for serious, serious repercussions, hospitalizations, death, etc., right? So when we look at it and we say, well, you know, the kids can go to school, but most of the kids, the vast majority of them, 99.7%, I don't disagree with your numbers, Andy. The problem is that this infectious disease goes from those kids to other older people who can be affected. Are we saying that we should put these kids in a bubble and not have them socially interact when they get out of school? We're not saying any of that, right? That's the first thing. Secondly, when we look at this, I really believe we've got to take the politics out of it, and you guys have done that, and I love that. Take the politics out of it. This is a health issue. This is about an infectious disease, simple as that. Let's not worry about the left or the right. Let's just look at what it is. Here's the thing, when we look at this, if you know somebody, and I don't know if either of you know somebody who's personally gone through it, I'm not going to speak for
you. I have a friend who died.
Okay. So I think Dale, when he talks about this, his link to this infectious disease, his emotional attachment to this is attached to his friend. So when people text in and they say, oh, you know, you're just a lefty and you're just this and that, you don't know what you're talking about, I think most of those people, not every single one of them, but most of those people fail to acknowledge or realize that this is personalized for Dale. I have a friend who is fit. You know, I don't know if he's, you know, 50 or if he's in his, you know, early 40s. He doesn't smoke. He has no underlying conditions. And he lives in Connecticut. He got really, really sick. They gave him less than a 10% chance of living. He literally was one of 10 people that went into the hospital with this and was put on a ventilator and was able to get to the other side and is healthy now, you know, thankfully. When you have somebody, we tend to look at these numbers. And I think that's why Dale knows the exact number of deaths. And Andy says, there's about 160,000. When we talk about
I was just going to let you go, but I have a neighbor who died. I've had multiple family members who've had it. Like, I've crossed paths with it. So I just want to make sure I paint the picture that he doesn't know anybody, so he's got no emotional connection. I do.
Andy, hold on. I just said that I don't know your backgrounds, and I don't know what I'm saying. When people use numbers, and I'm not saying you specifically were doing this, but when a lot of people throw numbers out there, and I think what some people do, they throw the numbers out there to make themselves feel better about what's going on, which is fine. It's a mental thing. It's a way to cope with it. I get it. But we're talking about young men and women. And to me, it might sound hyperbolic. It might sound to be too much. But if we lose young adults in this country because we wanted college football on Saturdays or because we were unwilling to maybe delay the school until we were in a better place, how do we all feel about that? If that young person is your cousin, your son, your you know what I mean? Like for me, if I don't have any children, if I had a son and he wanted to play college football, he's going to make his own decision. He's an adult, but you're damn right. I'm going to sit down and tell him I'm uncomfortable with the idea of him returning to college football. When the stats also tell me, which has not been mentioned by anybody, right now, the infection rate is jumping, and it's jumping with people that are between 20 and 29 years old for the most part.
All right, I don't know who's made people lose their minds more today, Andy Hart or Tuukka Rask. It's a coin
and
flip
it's,
at
he,
this point.
No, he wins because he made me lose my mind, so he's plus
it's,
one.
It's Dale and Keefe with Hart and Cattle, Sports Radio WEEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.